Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Selina Onyando, and I'll be hosting you today. This podcast is brought to you by the Lawyers Hub Kenya as part of this year's MozFest by the Mozilla Foundation. Today's conversation seeks to explore the policy considerations for artificial intelligence in Africa. There's no doubt that artificial intelligence is changing the way we interact with the world. It's changing our relationship with money, land, leadership, and even the law. Despite the potential that Africa has in the use for AI for development, the continent falls quite low on the readiness scale. This can be attributed to the social cultural nuances on the continent and systemic challenges that have translated into digital processes, poor data governance processes, limited capacity for policymakers to engage in legislative processes are also some of the challenges that we've seen in recent years. There has, however, been significant measures initiated to guide the development and the use of AI through the launch of strategies and policies, enactment of legislation, more specifically data protection laws, and establishment of centers of excellence. Today, we have quite an interesting panel with us today. Will give us some background on what the AI policy landscape looks like in Africa, and also what considerations policymakers must have when designing sustainable AI policies for the continent. Without further ado, I will introduce our panel for today. We have Ms. Deshni Govender, who is a policy advisor facilitating the development of AI policy and AI resources as public goods, and advising on AI policy frameworks, inclusive AI ethics, data governance, and auditing of AI systems. We also have Mr. Kenneth Muhanji, who is a lawyer specializing in intellectual property law, technology law, most specifically fintech and digital trade, data protection and privacy, the fourth industrial revolution, the Internet of Things, artificial intelligence as well. Kenneth represents Uganda at the fourth industrial revolution portfolio communities at the center of the fourth industrial revolution of the World Economic Forum. We also have with us Ms. Shamira Ahmed, who is a senior researcher at Research ICT Africa. She's interested in sustainable development economics, policy analysis, globalization, digitalization, and structural economic change in low and middle income countries. That being said, I'll just kick the first question to you, Shamira. Maybe you can paint a picture of what the AI policy landscape looks like in Africa. What strides, if any, have countries taken towards AI policy?
A lot of countries have taken a lot of strides in having some sort of either a data governance framework or national plan on somehow the 4IR, not necessarily as explicit as AI, maybe the 4IR. Some have AI policies, but for me, what stands out is that many of these policies, like just a plan, and there's a lot of incoherence and there's a lot of difficulties with implementation and monitoring some policy coherence and ensuring that AI is not just based on like ICT sector or science and innovation or data governance and digital trade. I think the COVID pandemic has highlighted that regional structural economic deficiencies and intersectional inequalities have been amplified, and the economic and social value of the digital economy has increased exponentially. So for me, the policy landscape is quite uneven and unpredictable, but it's also exciting because it means there's opportunities for AI to facilitate achievement of the SDGs, depending on the use case. And there's also opportunities for African policy makers to deviate from a business as usual scenario and actively ensure that the global AI and data governance rules and standards also align to the best interests of Africa as a region.
Thanks for that, Shamira. I think I'll also just kick it to you, Kenneth. Based off your experience in your advisory role working closely with governments, what have you seen probably have been the biggest successes or challenges that these institutions face in designing Africa's AI policy environment?
Thank you very much for that question, Selina. I think at the moment, whenever you're discussing artificial intelligence, the discussion goes beyond law, goes beyond policy, goes into society, goes into science, goes into philosophy, because the questions that I'm grappling with is, you know, at the moment, machine learning is seen as just that, machine learning. But what happens when these machines reach a level where they become self-aware. This was a discussion I was having with a few friends of mine. A few of them thought, you know, that's impossible. That will never happen. But a few others, if you understand exactly the way machine learning works, you know that there's a possibility that perhaps, you know, since we don't know very much about this consciousness thing, how does consciousness appear? How does consciousness exist? How does consciousness sustain itself? And can a machine be able to learn to be conscious or to be self-aware? And so if you're dealing with regulation, sometimes it is difficult to be able, of course, to stop innovation and to stop any developments that go farther, perhaps, than a mandate that has been granted to be able to allow development or to allow innovation in a particular industry or field. But looking at AI policy and AI regulation in general, the discussion we're having now is on the ethics of this AI. How far should AI research go? If you reach a stage that is dangerous, let's say for certain communities, certain societies, certain people, should you regulate and stop anyone that is researching in those areas? You know, should you ask them to stop? Should you ask them to continue? And then you just regulate and perhaps deal with the after effects. So there's so many ethical challenges, especially regarding ethics and human rights of artificial intelligence. And of course, then the other issues with liability as well. We're looking at it from the AI that we have now. The issues of liability are now, you know, stemming up. What happens if someone creates a self-driving car and the car knocks someone or the car causes an accident? Who would be liable? Is it the person that has purchased the car? Would they be liable to the person that they have knocked? Is it the person that has distributed or marketed the car? Or is it the person who has created the car, whoever has created the system that runs the AI? So these are all issues that policymakers are grappling with, and I think we'll continue to grapple with. And then, of course, also finding a correct regulatory model. You know, you don't know whether you should have an evidence-based approach to regulation where you look at, you know, what's happening in the industry rather than trying to stifle any innovation or any progress in a particular industry. And so you create laws that may be overzealous, so to speak, or should you create laws that are reactionary, where you regulate depending on what's happening? You know, sometimes we fear these things. Like, remember from the time the recapture tests came up, you know, for you to be able to determine whether you're dealing with a robot or you're dealing with a human being, we all thought that, you know, machines would beat this test quickly. But it's been years since that has happened. And we're still using these same tests to be able to verify whether I am a robot or whether I am a human being. And so it may not be a good idea to overregulate, but then on the other hand, knowing and understanding how far technology has gone and where we are, the challenge as well is if you wait for that to happen, then perhaps then you start to get AI that is overly discriminatory or that is overly racist, for example. And we've seen this happen for certain companies that decide to use automated tools to be able to run their social media accounts. And what happens is these tools then collect all this bias and all this racial data, and that's what they then use to be able to communicate to the public. So should you wait for that to happen, for someone to be offended first, of course, or for, you know, if let's say now the repercussions were even more there rather than just being offended, but if let's say this was AI that was deployed in the military space and you deploy it then to go fight a war in, you know, on the African continent, and if it came to Uganda or Kenya, you know, what type of people would it be looking out for? What presets have been coded into these machines to be able to allow them to be deployed in the areas that they are deployed? Beyond that as well, of course, there are also very big aspects of data protection. How do you manage the data that goes through the systems? How do you ensure that there's accountability if you're dealing with automated decision-making? Many of our laws provide that, you know, especially for consent, you must also provide a separate level of consent if you're dealing with automated decision making. But how practical is that, especially if these decisions are happening in real time and there are thousands, if not millions, of these decisions happening over a particular network? So who would be accountable once these are identified? And then, of course, issues to do with certification and safety standards. What is the appropriate standard to use in Uganda or in Kenya? Is it the same standard you'd use in the UK? Are we at the same level in terms of development or in terms of the application of the law, or are societies is our society demographic similar? And then, of course, also trying to think, should you create separate laws, what we call sui generis laws, to be able to regulate artificial intelligence, or should we beef up already existing laws, things like our cyber security laws, our data protection laws? do those suffice to be able to look at artificial intelligence, or do we need a specific law that will be able to govern or look at artificial intelligence in general? So I think those are the issues I've seen that have come up, but I'm also thankful that as a continent, as countries, we're looking at these very closely. I know Africa, we have the African Union Convention on Cybersecurity and Personal Data Protection, which has aspects of artificial intelligence. We also have various other recommendations on ethics from UNESCO, from the World Intellectual Property Organization. Actually, just last week, we had a workshop organized by the UN Global Pulse and UNESCO looking at the ethics of artificial intelligence in Uganda. And there we're looking at all the laws in Uganda and how and what are the ethical considerations that would arise as a result of applying AI. And so there are so many other regulations that have come up, not only not only from UNESCO or WIPO, but also within the EU and nations themselves. Uganda in particular also convened a working group, which was co-convened by our Ministry of Science, Technology and Innovation as well, to look at the ethics of AI and to look at the regulatory perspective or hurdles that would be occasioned as a result of applying AI. So I think that's what I would say about that.
Thanks so much, Kenneth. Lots to unpack there, but I think I'll just pick on something that you said that I think really drives the conversation today. You spoke a bit about community and ethics, and the needs of the African continent are so specific. For example, in Kenya, where people are speaking over 47 different, you know, you have over 47 different ethnicities all speaking different languages. So that just shows you how different the needs of the continent are. And that brings me to the question of what regulatory models for Africa should look like. I'll throw this one over to you, Deshni. What would you say are the building blocks of AI policy in Africa, and what considerations must policymakers have when designing sustainable policies that speak specific to the needs of the continent?
Okay, so I think I would start first with asking, you know, what is the reference point that the policymakers are coming from? Because we talk a lot about making policy and we assume that it's something that is known. And Kenneth had raised a lot of issues in so far as, you know, understanding AI and then, and you know, trying to regulate it. So I think my first point of reference is understanding where are the policymakers coming from? Like, what is their reference point of understanding AI? And then trying to draft a policy on top of that, because I think it's very critical. I mean, we as Africa, and South Africa is no different, I assure you. We've oftentimes, you know, criticized governments, criticized policymakers to say, well, the policy doesn't suit the people, or maybe it may be politically inclined. And I think that Africa now has an excellent opportunity to almost remedy that, to say, let us understand the AI first and then make the policy. And I think that the important thing is to understand how much of the AI policy do policymakers understand, and then start to break it down to say, what are we doing to help our policymakers understand? And when I say policymakers, I would actually throw this one out because I think it's important for policy influencers to be included in this discussion. Policy influencers are people that obviously our policymakers would engage, but they are either in the research or the academia section or industry. And I think that depending on the countries you come from, private sector or industry has a massive role to play in shaping or determining where the AI policy is, especially if we get into discussing the AI readiness scale. So without going getting too complex into this, what should we consider? Firstly, I think we should understand that policy, firstly, there's a national level and there's a slightly meta continental level. If we wanna work together as Africa to say, cool, Africa as a continent, there are a lot of overlaps and a lot of problems that we face similarly. Yes, that's when we can look to entities like Smart Africa, who have created the AI blueprint, in which we would say, cool, as a continent, what is important to us? What are our values and morals and ethics and what we see as relevant for AI? This is what we're going to focus on. And then when you bring it up to a national level, I think it needs to interplay with the type of economy you have. And then policymakers should be trained and adapted accordingly. Someone has to go on that journey with the policymakers to take them on that journey to say, what are we actually creating policy for and for whom? And the people that are the target audience of the policy, you know, policy is not just policy. It's not just one document. It is representative of where the country needs to go at a national level for a whole country. And everybody knows that even within a country, the AI readiness scale of people are different. Policies, especially policymakers in Africa, need to understand that within their own countries, there are different readiness scales. Africa has a youth average as a continental average age of 19 years, you know, as a continent. South Africa's average age is about 27 years, you know, the average age of the population. So when you look at that, you need to look at these nuances and say, cool, what is our state here in this country? Are we driven by industry like South Africa is, or are we driven by a very large developed private sector? But if you look at Rwanda, you know, contrastingly, their private sector is not so developed. Their country is actually driven. The government largely drives AI, the AI narratives and pushing the AI agenda and policy. So your structure of your policy would be different. Who do you talk to? Is the target audience included? And the target audience is not just saying, let's just gather up the youth and have a conversation and do some focus groups. You need to look at the people that are going to be affected directly and indirectly. What are the direct consequences and possible unintended consequences? All of these elements need to be considered when you're making policy. So it's not about getting a group of lawyers and researchers around the table. And I say that with respect, Kenneth, I'm a lawyer myself, although not practicing. But it's not about just getting people to write a great document. And I mean, I you know, the question was targeted about what AI policymakers should look at in Africa. I think I would throw this in as a little side anecdote that when also looking at policy, I think Africa should not be rushing to say, listen, US has a policy and EU has a policy and OECD has a policy. And, you know, all the alphabets are creating policies now. You know, where does that leave us? And to rush out to create one because we feel that we need to play catch up. Because for me, that's a very dangerous thing to do without fully understanding the implications for Africa.
I agree wholly. I think you brought out a lot the issue of nuanced challenges on the country level. The challenges that Uganda is facing are not the same that Kenya is facing. And also the need for ecosystem engagement at a scale, you know, away from capacity building for policymakers and other professionals. What does the grassroots engagement look like? So those are some of the issues that I think we also need to consider on the country level, but also on the Africa-wide scale. I'd like to hear from you, Shamira, based off your experience as a policy influencer. I know you work a lot in research and academia, and your work feeds a lot into what policy looks like, but also what ethical AI looks like. I'd like to hear from you. What do you think are the considerations that policymakers must have when designing sustainable AI policy?
I'm not a lawyer, so maybe I might not speak well enough or articulate enough about the ethics side of things. But like from a development economics kind of perspective, a sustainable AI policy, for me, it implies that policymakers are considering contextually relevant and facilitate greater cooperation of policies across seemingly unrelated policy areas where AI, in particular data-driven AI deployment, could impact different economic development priorities, such as reducing multidimensional inequality, improving connectivity, and of course, promoting environmental sustainability to name a few. So sustainable AI policy for me, it implies that policymakers are experimental. They have a comprehensive, holistic approach to designing forward-looking policies, and they also consider different nuances, much as Kenneth and Deshni have mentioned, not only within a country, amongst in the continent or in a region, and also global governance issues and geopolitics also play such a significant role, especially in AI governance and AI policies.
Thanks, Shamira. There's no denying that there's a lot of influence, you know, from the West and other continents that feed into what AI systems in Africa look like. So thank you so much for lending that perspective. I'd like to hear from each one of you, starting with Kenneth. What opportunities do you see AI presents in Africa? I think more often we speak about AI, but don't look too much into what the practical use cases are. But it would be interesting to hear from the speakers. What do you see as the benefits for AI in Africa? If not now, what expected benefits do you foresee? Please feel free to share with us your favorite use case of AI in the region, something that stood out for you particularly.
Thank you for that, Selina. Maybe actually before that, I just wanted to really say I really enjoyed Jeshni and Shamira's explanation as to what we would look at if you're looking at the considerations for AI regulation. And so the only thing that maybe that I'd be able to add there is that UNESCO in particular gave recommendations where they're looking at, you need to have an interconnectedness between the values and principles of AI. And this interconnectedness then maybe creates sort of a hybrid system that allows you to be able to regulate in a forward-thinking manner. And really, the Deshni and the Shamira really hit the nail on the head. We're talking about how you need to have contextually relevant policies. But in terms of the benefits, of course, generally, whenever you're looking at technology, we're in the fourth industrial revolution. And so technology, artificial intelligence in particular, really has the potential, and it has really proven this, to make life easier. Of course, the AI application in healthcare, we're seeing that there's technology now that will allow people to be able to see that we're once blind. In the past, that was only the preserve of, you know, Jesus Christ as a miracle. But now we're seeing that these are tools that human beings have to be able to cure things like blindness. And then beyond that as well, we see AI, you know, applied in places like politics and in elections to make sure that elections are more transparent and they're fair as well. And that goes a long way to ensure that we improve democracy in Africa, improve democracy in our regions. Beyond elections and beyond healthcare, we're also looking at other facets of society, things like land, AI, and technology in general have made it easier to be able to adjudicate over disputes concerning land, because ownership is now easier to prove, especially if you're using technologies that allow transparency or make it easier for you to create land titles, for example, to be able to transfer land titles. So many of these systems have made work easier. And so these are all tools and ways that have helped us to live better lives, that have helped us to be able to enjoy our work, but also be able to enjoy our social lives as well. You know, sometimes whenever we're thinking of artificial intelligence, we only also think about it in terms of work, but even society. I think artificial intelligence and technology has allowed us to be able to live better together, because it makes it easier to be able to interact, and it makes it easier for us to be able to live in our societies and in our communities as well. So I think overall, the application of AI is one that I'm, you know, keen on furthering, especially actually if you're looking at it also in the aspect of genetics or in biology. I think artificial intelligence and the developments therein have helped us to understand our bodies more, helped us to understand our minds more, because the discussions, as I mentioned before, around AI also go into, you know, how is the mind made up? You know, how are neural pathways and neural networks configured? You know, can those be mirrored with artificial intelligence? And so research into those fields has also helped and has advanced us much, much further in areas of understanding ourselves, understanding who we are, understanding where we come from. And so I think that's a very, very big plus. And so I think those are really the benefits that I would put overall. I think they do outweigh the fears that we have and that have already been allayed.
Thank you so much for that, Kenneth. I'll hand over to you, Deshni.
So I don't know if I call them favorites, but I'm gonna throw out a few use cases that we've done both with the GIZ in partnership with the partner countries that we work with. So in the project Fair Forward that I am in, a really, really great one was developing the Mbasa chatbot in Rwanda. And I think it's so super incredible because the chatbot is actually developed in Kenya, Rwanda, which is the local language spoken in Rwanda. And the beauty of that is it's actually developed for the COVID. It was developed for COVID. And the really incredible thing about this is for the first time, people who aren't fluent in English or aren't, you know, versed in English at all, or even living in a rural area, you know, the chatbot could work on a USSD string. And we know that connectivity in Africa is sticky, right? So even in that context, it's really quite incredible that you have this chatbot that's available to give you correct information for COVID-19 in your home language, you know? So it was a really, really great initiative with the Rwandan government as well to develop the chatbot. So Uganda also has a really great use case. It's called Croppy. And basically it's an application that's used to identify, used in the agri space. And you could actually identify diseases and crop, use it to do yield prediction, use it to do drought planning. So it really is a great initiative, and we're actually working with them to actually enhance the application further with Croppy. So that's a really great use case for Uganda. And then South Africa, we also developed together with the Department of Agriculture in the Western Cape. We ran a Spot the Crop Challenge and then also developed a data set from that. And basically what we would do is use Earth observation with a data set to actually identify different types of crop in the region. And what we're trying to do, because that actually works so well, where you're able to identify different crops and identify yields and size and do predictive modeling, that you're able to, we're actually looking at trying to scale that. We know that transfer modeling is a little bit tricky, especially within a country and also across Africa, but agriculture is such a big part of, you know, our GDPs in countries. And then you also get the difference, you know, between commercial and smallholder farming. So I think that these use cases specifically where you're saying, listen, we're looking at countries and saying what is relevant for country, not take a solution and then find a problem to solve for it. So it's been really, really great to work with the different partner countries, which I said, to actually look at what actually works in country and how can we develop it. But yeah, so far, I mean, especially between 2020, 2021, those are my three key ones that have been super exciting for me to see development on.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, it just goes to show that there's so much actually being done on the continent than what many think. So thank you so much for sharing. I'll hand over to Shamira as we close off. Shamira, from your experience, what would you say are the opportunities that AI presents in Africa, and what are some of your favorite use cases in the region so far?
So there are a wide range of opportunities for AI, for example, to facilitate achievement of the SDGs at different parts of realization of the SDGs, depending on the use case, as Deshni has highlighted. But like, for me, there's also a lot of hype about AI and not enough evidence on how it can actually be applied in African contexts, which are very different from many of the countries that dominate the research, the governance, and the deployment of AI. Like in the global south, we have China, and in the global north, many of the countries dominate that type of research. But needless to say, I like the range of AI use cases that AI can be applied across many industries, as Deshni mentioned, in agriculture, in financial services for financial inclusion, in health services. For example, when I was conducting my research on using AI in fintech ecosystems in Ghana, Nigeria, Kenya, and South Africa, I learned that not only sophisticated AI models or algorithms or using large data sets are needed to make AI-based solution to meet the needs of the context or the users. But you can also deploy simpler models that, for example, another complex model that has been used from Microsoft to Google, you can also make a simpler model that's actually very scalable and more applicable depending on the use case. So the opportunities that I like or that I learned about are ones which are contextually relevant, where you have people, African people, developing models and solutions using AI for actual problems that people have, as Deshni mentioned.
Thank you so much. They say in Africa, we innovate to survive. So hearing some of the contexts that have been raised, it's good to see that that's actually what's happening, is that it's something that needs to be used in the continent to improve livelihoods. So thank you so much for sharing, guys. I don't know if anyone has...
I'd love to add something. Yes.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Selena. I was intrigued by Shamira's comment, and I totally agree. I think sometimes whenever we're talking about artificial intelligence, so many of these technologies, it doesn't, you know, we don't really bring them home. But I think if I could just use another use case example, and perhaps, you know, all of us perhaps then would be the judge of that. If you're looking at, let's say, the entertainment movie industry in Africa, I think Hollywood and the music industry all over the world has, you know, it's been a key factor for growing economies and growing GDPR. In the UK in 2020 alone, I think they got about $1 billion in revenue from streaming services from their music industry alone. And it's what we're doing in Africa as well. That's why Nigerian music is now hitting the world. We're seeing that Fireboy got a collaboration, I think, with Madonna. That's something that was big. But I don't think we'd be able to get, you know, I don't think we'd have progressed as far as we have without using or employing tools in AI, especially in music. I know for a fact that in Uganda, we got our first, you know, series or movie on Netflix, which is The Girl in the Yellow Jumper. And I was speaking with the producer or director of that particular production. And he was saying that the only way the movie was able to get to Netflix was because they'd improved on the quality of the sound. And it's cheaper now to be able to get soundtracks that, because if AI is creating a particular sound or soundtrack, it would be cheaper than if it was gotten from a particular artist that maybe may ask for thousands, you know, of dollars to be able to use songs in the tracks. And so for economies that are still developing and for industry that are still developing, like the music industry, which is the user case that I'm bringing to you and to the audience as well, we're seeing that using AI has been very instrumental in trying to bridge that gap, in improving the quality of our production. And that is then translated into more income, translated into employment, because the population in Africa is mostly urban youth. So I was really happy with Shamira's content. I think we need to start to talk more about the AI applications, not just in the abstract, but technically how they're helping Ugandans, how they're helping Africans. And I'm actually looking forward to seeing Kropi, the app that Deshni mentioned. Since it's in, you know, my backyard, I'd love to know exactly what their tool is and how it has helped in their particular communities. I think Deshni has a hand up.
Yes, please, Deshni, go ahead.
Cool. I'm actually loving this discussion, and I'm very sad that it has to end, because it's looked like it's taken an interesting turn. I think the one thing I would add, which is very important and probably warrant another podcast session, and Kenneth and both Shamira alluded to this, particularly Shamira, is that when we have this, I mean, it's super exciting that we're seeing Africa develop tech for Africa, but I think what's still very important, and I think it's something that has to be addressed, is around, you know, use of data sets and collection of data, and where does that come from and who does that reflect? Because I think it's at the biggest struggle that we have in Africa is to actually produce the tech. We're not lacking the talent. We have the talent, we have the intelligence, we have the capability and the motivation. You know, we have the environment to succeed. I think that it is these nuances that kind of almost limit us in some ways, because of the concentration of data collection happening in countries that are already advanced. So we'll call them developed nations. And so for me, I think it's incredible that we're developing this, but the actual collection and understanding the use of data bothers me a little bit, because I think that right now a lot of the data sets we use even to train our models are not African centric, or they're not developed with the right data set target groups. So without being too controversial, but the point is, though, it's for me, I'm super excited about seeing the technology develop. I think that it warrants a bigger discussion on data ethics in general, but also data ethics, and what we can do as a continent to make sure that the data that we have is actually collected, used by us, for us, you know, and it's not almost being taken out and then repackaged and purposed and then kind of being sold back to us. You know, and they were like, oh, we're creating tech, but we're not really creating our tech, you know. But I mean, baby steps, and I will take it, whatever progress we can make. But I think it just warrants a wider discussion, and one I'm happy to have with my colleagues here.
Yeah, thanks for that, Deshni. I think we look at public, private intent data sets, and most times there's a bias because they're not created on the continent. And then there's also the issue of access to public intent data, which is often very limited because governments struggle with giving out that type of data, despite the presence of policies that support sharing, you know, data sharing between government and private entities. But as you mentioned, that's probably a conversation that should be carried forward. But I'd like to hear from you, Shamira. Anything you'd like to add as we close off the discussion?
I think also beyond just looking at data, we should also consider algorithmic governance and ethics in algorithms as well. Transparency, explainability, and the way the algorithm is modeled as also plays a part in like who actually benefits from the AI use case or the application. So I think all those are like more discussions we need to have. As Deshni said, it can become controversial, but like it's discussions we need to have to understand exactly how we are going to use AI to benefit everyone, not only people who already are privileged, but to make sure that this fourth industrial revolution, or the so-called fourth industrial revolution, is revolutionary for everyone, not only people who would already benefit from any disruptive technology or any changes in the ecosystem.
Thank you so much to our speakers for joining us. It has been quite the conversation and only the tip of the iceberg. We hope to carry this conversation forward to the Africa Law Tech Festival that will run from the 5th to the 18th of June 2020. This year's festival is dubbed Africa-Europe dialogue on artificial intelligence. And we hope to explore what regulatory models look like in Europe, what they look like in the region, and what we can do in terms of shared learnings to improve both models and the AI policy framework on the global scale. Thank you again for joining us. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. And you can find us on all streaming platforms at Africa Law Tech Podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter @LawyersHub Kenya and @Africa Law Tech. Till next time.